Law Office Management, this is your guide for week number 9 as we return from spring break. Before you listen to this guide, I hope that you have read the text chapter. If you haven't, go back and read the text chapter before answering the 3 parts to this week's assignment. The first part requires you to go out and find the official site for the Illinois Lawyers Trust Account that sets forth expectations for lawyers in Illinois regarding trust accounts, and read and be familiar with those pages before also reviewing what the Illinois Code of Professional Responsibility requires of lawyers regarding such accounts. And you're going to be answering questions regarding those things. What a lawyer can use a trust account to pay, or how a trust account can be used to pay certain things, and what. And then I'm asking you to find and summarize an Illinois case in which a lawyer ended up in trouble for violating the requirements of the Illinois Lawyers Trust Account with a good summary of why, the facts, what happened, and one case per student. Part 2 of this week's assignment is to explore and discuss why law firms experience cash flow problems. What are some of the solutions to those cash flow problems? What is a draw? So it's 3 parts in part 2. And those are things that you need to be familiar with. Some of you working in or interning with law firms, it'll help you understand, you know, what the accounting process and some of the things that go on that may be mysteries to you, because we don't always explain those things. In part 3, can I split fees with you as a lawyer? Can I split fees with my paralegal, and why or why not? And what's your authority? And then what can I do in a manner over and above your salary if I wanted to reward you for your hard work? So the Illinois Lawyers Trust Fund website provide you with all the answers to what a lawyer is expected to do. I'm not going to read through that site, but I want you to go and be familiar with that site. I want you to be able to tell me what is the IOLTA? Why is it necessary? What is an Illinois Lawyers Trust account? What is it? How is it set up? You need to know those basics. You need to know where to find this, because a lot of times paralegals are the person or persons who end up having to navigate and process things through the lawyer's trust account, verifying with the bookkeeper or whoever's doing your accounting what the client's entitled to, what the law firm's entitled to, checking the numbers, and knowing that that amount, whatever, is not supposed to be distributed, remains in the trust account, and what is paid for or allowed to be paid for from the trust account. You should understand what commingling is, and if you don't know what that word is, look it up, please. And commingling is, you know, something that's important. It's something that you should know what it means. You should know how to avoid commingling. And in fact, to see if you've listened to this guide, and if you don't listen to this guide, you won't have this part, but I want you to embold in caps, tell me what commingling is with a reference to an Illinois case in which commingling was the main issue. And tell me what the outcome was. And provide a summary of the correct citation to your case. And if you do that, you can get the full points for this week. And if you didn't do that, then you won't. And you'll have to explain to me why you didn't do that. Now, all this will seem pretty straightforward, but the cases note that it's not always followed. In a nutshell, we keep the client's money separate from the lawyer's money, and lawyers sometimes get in trouble. even when they can account for every penny of the client's money, if they've used trust account funds to pay your salary or pay the light bill or because they were short on their own funds, that's a violation. Okay, that's commingling. And so show me an example. You know, what is a law firm's income? As you break this down, I want you to tell me, what are the two main categories of income and define each? You know, is it fees billed and retainer amounts earned? And as you do that, identify some of the categories and expenses found in law office accounting. You know, what expenses may be charged to a client? Do lawyers and law firms find themselves at issue with clients over expenses? In a few short weeks, you're going to be doing the main or final project for this course, which is to set up a law firm under circumstances that I'm going to provide. And we've been doing basic pieces of that that you'll be able to use as your foundation for updating, you know, what's something you've already done to fit certain parameters. But you need to understand what those expenses are for a law firm. What is our overhead? Expenses vary, but are traditionally the same wherever you go, large firm, small firm, or sole practitioner. And you should know how the firm or lawyer wants these things accounted for and operate accordingly. Now, some people do a much better job of keeping track of their expenses and forecasting for how they deal with those expenses, and others do not. And the ones that do not run into cash flow problems, and that's the second part of the focus of this week. Why do law firms experience cash flow problems, and what are some of the solutions to those problems? And then I asked you also to define a draw. Typically, law firms experience cash flow problems for the same reasons that any other business experiences cash flow problems. Well, it's easy to point a finger at a failure to have a defined budget process, a general lack of business training for many lawyers, or the difficulty in balancing the realities of business with the expectation for practicing law, because most of us in this profession want to focus on representing the client and going to court and practicing our profession. And because of all those things, it's the nature of a lawyer that you should focus on your legal services rendered far before worrying about the fees, collection of fees, or how those fees are utilized, or overhead, or things like that. This is one of the primary struggles most lawyers experience. There's a conflict there between going out and focusing on what you need to do to represent a client and then trying to figure out, you know, how the business should be run. The other is the uncertain nature of fee production in many areas of practice. For instance, if you're primarily a real estate lawyer or firm, but the market is down, your fee production is going to be affected. You know, in the past 10 or so years, we've had a fluctuation in when real estate was moving or not moving. And I have friends that are in that line of work and do that type of practice. And, you know, when things were really good, they couldn't hardly keep up. And they complained that they couldn't hardly keep up, but they were making money. When the market was down drastically, you may remember the Great Recession around 2008, when property wasn't moving, you know, when they were struggling to make any money, wasn't so great. So we don't always have that ability to control our cash flow. Now we can, depending on the area of practice, we can definitely try to manage that in a different way. But that's why you see most lawyers, most firms, almost constantly beating the bushes for additional work. It's really difficult to not do this. Now, I know lawyers who have done this and tried to manage. And for instance, they were pretty strict when it came to meeting their maximum capacity. I have a family law lawyer friend who practiced for many years and sort of semi-retired now, and he would get to a certain point, and it didn't matter if it was a case that might generate $1 million in fees. When he hit that point, he just wasn't taking any additional clients because he, A, didn't want to grow, and B, he knew his capacity, and he stuck to that capacity. I have another friend who's also a very good family law lawyer, and she struggles constantly because she's a very good family law lawyer. And so she, a lot of times, probably more often than not, is at that point where she's past capacity, and she's just struggling. She keeps up, and she does a very good job, but it's always on her mind. It's always worrying her. So there's a balance there, and being able to stick to that balance or find that balance, you know, that's the difficult thing, and that's something that you'll see. In many areas of practice, especially those related to representing corporations, insurance companies, the expectation for assignment of work can be as unpredictable as the clients can be fickle. That's why you see most lawyers, you know, constantly beating the bushes there. In those circumstances, those clients sometimes tell you, you know, you have a limit on what you can bill. And to the point that that may mean that you have to maybe not do what you would normally do as far as research, effort towards something. Now, what happens in most cases, because lawyers aren't willing to risk malpractice, is one of those clients will say that you're only allowed to spend, say, $5,000 on research. But if it takes you $10,000 in time to complete that research, that means that you eat $5,000 of your time or your paralegal's time. And so those lawyers sometimes struggle, depending on the clients and the nature of the work, to make money, and it can be stressful. So the thoughts that these points should provoke are twofold. First, if your lawyer or law firm is not concerned about new business, you may want to keep your resume current. And second, if you have an opportunity to bring clients to your firm, you will be much appreciated. Now, remember, you can't go out and solicit those clients, but I'm talking about when your cousin or your neighbor or whoever tries to tell you about their legal problem. If it's something your law firm does, or it's something your law firm could refer to someone who does, then say, I'll talk to my boss tomorrow, my supervising lawyer, and you know, I'll get back to you. And then talk to your lawyer about it and see what they think, because they will appreciate that. A draw, you know, most law firms are set up as corporations, and as you're now becoming aware, these corporations have fluctuating incomes. You, as my paralegal, expect to get a salary. My partners or fellow shareholders, owners of the corporation, would like the same sort of regular income. The problem is that because of the lack of regular income coming into most firms, we must take a draw. In other words, we draw out a regular salary, and then at the end of the year, we may either be owed money or owe money, depending on whether the amount of our draw was more or less than the share of the firm income that we were entitled to. And that's how partners are paid. Now, associates and all the rest of the staff, associate attorneys and all the rest of the staff, they get a salary. If things are good, we pay everybody else a salary, but as partners, we may not get a salary. And those times come too. Or, you know, at the end of the year, you owe money. I, as a partner, I took less because I feared that at the end of the year, I wouldn't be able to pay it back. I had a partner who would take more, and then sometimes he would end up having to pay us at the end of the year. Ideally, at the end of the year, you got a bigger check. Because at the end of the year, if you hadn't taken the amount you were entitled to as an owner, you got that additional money at that point. So better to play it safe. Now, that's not unique to law firms. For instance, my wife sells cars at Bob Lindsay Honda. She gets a draw. She gets a salary that hopefully by the end of the year ends up being less than what she's earned in commissions. And then so she, you know, she gets her commissions on top of that, and then hopefully she does consistently okay, and she's pretty darn good at it. I think she sold 4 cars last Saturday because she's just good with customers and attentive to customers, and so they come back. But if you're in one of those types of jobs, so it's not unique to law firms, and I don't want you to think that if that's a new concept to you, but that is how owners or the partners get paid in a law firm, and it's similar to how some other people get paid in different types of areas of practice of law. Now, some recommended practices, you know, a bookkeeper or office manager is a must. You need to have somebody who's managing the business aspects of the practice, or is primarily responsible for signing checks or making sure payments are made or keeping track of things. Because lawyers a lot of times don't have that time, if they're, especially if they're in a practice that is client and litigation driven. You need to perform careful routine examinations of your books. One of the things unique to the practice of law is lawyers that do assign those bookkeeper and office manager responsibilities to other people and don't keep careful routine examinations of their books may end up in the newspaper because that person stole from them. That happens. You see it. You need to read all bills, statements, and documents related to finances in a timely manner. Every month we would review our bills before they went out. My paralegal, Michelle, would review the bills. I would review the bills. We would review what we were paying out, double check everything. And we did that as those things happened, but regularly, at least every month, go and check the books. Now for you, one of the little caveats, and if you listen to this, you get this tip. Michelle used to keep track of how much she was billing or earning for the firm. So when it came down to review time, or if she wanted to do something or have some unique opportunity, she could argue for it. And I did that as a young lawyer. You know, that's how I essentially became, a partner early. I knew what I was billing. I knew the income I was creating for the firm. I knew that my long hours and busting my butt and going out and getting business and closing cases and, you know, developing that reputation was paying off for other people, and so I pushed for it. You know, I knew my worth, and I let everybody know that I knew my worth, and I suggest that a paralegal do that. You know your worth and know what you're bringing in, and if you're doing what you should be doing and you think you're entitled to more, you know, then do that. At the end of the year, we gave a bonus, and that bonus was based on performance, and we would sit down and we would evaluate, and we'd talk about the different employees, and we'd figure that out. So absolutely do that. We should establish guidelines on how the mail is opened or processed. You know, most of these things being electronic, who's going to review it and how's it going to be filed? And especially when we're talking about payments received or bills that need to be paid. We used to, on paper checks, require 2 signatures for anything over a designated amount. As these are electronic, it's still expected or a good thing to have 2 people review before those payments are ever made. And again, go back to what I said about lawyers have been ripped off by people they entrusted to do these things. So if you can have that person do it in our office, that person could sign with one of the partners. And a lot of times you designate a particular partner who agrees to take on those business duties and somebody as their backup. Schedule internal and external audits. Use your CPA. Have a CPA. Set up internal accounting controls pursuant to what they suggest. Now, I have done my own plumbing in my house. I have done some minor carpentry over the years, but carpenters build, plumbers plumb. I'm not an accountant. I always defer to the accountant. I just wrapped up my taxes, which are not that difficult, but I paid extra to have somebody review it. It was a weird year, you know. My wife was off work, and we had all these weird things going on, and, you know, it was worth it to me to do that, to protect my butt. In a law practice, we had an accountant. The accountant reviewed the bookkeeper every month. The accountant, at the end of the year, did a little audit. It's worth the money. Now, some lawyers may not want to pay that or think they can do it on their own, but unless they're a CPA, they really should have somebody else do that. Finally, we talked about fees, or I'm going to have you look at fees. It's always a topic debated by students and working paralegals alike, especially after you become more seasoned, is whether or not, you know, you deserve a little more. And I just talked about pay increases. The reality is often accentuated when the paralegal and lawyer leave the office at night and the paralegal gets in his or her trusty and maybe rusty Chevrolet, and the lawyer hops in a vehicle that costs of which may approach a large chunk of the assessed value of the paralegal's home. This isn't a debate we'll ever fully resolve until the current law changes regarding professional conduct for lawyers on the issue of fees without the following conclusion. If you want to enjoy the majority of a legal fee paid by a client for legal services rendered, go to law school, pass the bar, and hang out your shingle. Again, it goes back to UPL and unauthorized practice of law, and that's what the law requires, and that's probably what it's always going to require. Now, having said that, we should recognize that lawyers do give bonuses. These aren't normally the type of bonuses that possibly the most famous of paralegals, Aaron Brockovich, received. You may remember that, and if you don't, I'll link it when I post my comments for this week. That bonus, as it was depicted in the show, is not how she would have been able to receive that bonus in Illinois. On the other hand, if you're my paralegal and we bust our butts through hectic and complicated litigation and you pull the oar as much, if not more, than I do to get us from start to finish in the case, I'm going to give you some sort of recognition. The check will not have any designation regarding that case. It won't say anything or be distinguishable from any other paycheck. And I believe most progressive lawyers appreciate and are very much aware of the value of their paralegals, especially those who have practices centered on litigation. Those individuals will be inclined to pay out bonuses when you have a big case settled. Don't expect any particular percentage or large chunk, but expect a nice little extra bit of cash or recognition for your efforts, and it won't have any reference to that case. And they can do that as a performance bonus over the whole year. And sometimes, depending on what's going on, they may do that periodically throughout the year. So that's what we're looking at this week. And these things are important towards our final project, which will be hitting you in about 3 weeks. So really put in the time this week to get familiar with these things. And if you're working in a law office or in an internship, as you go through these things, some of these experiences you're having or things that you've witnessed may start to click. And if they do, great. Make note. All right? This is what we're covering this week. I appreciate your efforts all the first half of the semester, and recognize and remember, second half of the semester is a downhill slide that goes very quick. You know where to find me if you need me. Stay well.